Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is Zero Point Radio on BBS Radio. And today we have another guest, and my co-host Jim and I will be leading you through 2 hours of our show here. Now, just as a little background, my interest, I consider myself a mystic scientist, and I'm a PhD clinical and forensic psychologist, but I've studied the mystical and occult spiritual literature for 30 years now in an effort to understand the origins and nature of human consciousness. So one of the most profound ideas I've learned through this period of study is the concept of what I call the heart doctrine. In all mystical and spiritual teachings, the true origin of self within the human being originates from within the heart. The self is within the heart, and the ego is identified with the mind in the head. So mystics are concerned with awakening of the heart consciousness and the dissolution of the false mind, the consciousness centered in the brain and the mind. So Ramana Maharshi says defines yoga as the dissolution of the false mind into the lotus of the heart. So a primary focus in zero-point studies is this concept of trying to understand the mystical nature of the human heart and to awaken that consciousness within ourself to experience self-realization. I maintain that all of Western psychology and science for the past 100 years, per century, has attempted to discredit the idea of human beings as having a spirit or soul. And they have what I call a pseudo-scientific teaching, maintaining that somehow the brain produces consciousness and the consciousness is centered in the head. Even though within science, if you examine it carefully, you realize that there's absolutely no data to confirm or explicate this. That really it's just a dogma of modern science, what I call the head doctrine. So that false teaching, I say, compares, I say the true teaching is this deeper ancient heart doctrine teaching. The origins of self are connected to the heart. That's one of the themes that we explore through zero-point studies. And the second is this concept of zero points. I draw this concept from the work of H.P. Blavatsky, an occult scholar who in 1888 published The Secret Doctrine. And this is a classic book of occult literature. Manly Hall describes it, says of The Secret Doctrine, he describes it as undoubtedly the magnus opus of the literature of the modern world. And Blavatsky predicted in 1888 that in the century to come, people would come to understand her teaching and that science would validate her teaching. Anyway, in The Secret Doctrine, one of the most profound ideas is that all living beings have a zero-point center. What I mean by a zero-point center is like there is a center or self which is so small it appears as nothing. It would disappear from view as you penetrated into its inner nature. Just as a universe emerges from a singularity point. Imagine that, a whole universe emerged from a point 10 to the minus 33 centimeters called a singularity. That's at Planck's length. I'm saying similarly, a human being has a point source of emergence within the heart. And I'm maintaining that there's a higher dimensional physics to what the human heart really is. And to understand the nature of spirit and soul, the nature of higher dimensions, and so on, we have to explore the physics of the human heart. That we ourselves exist in higher dimensional space. And that human beings, in a way, none of us are what we think we are. In a way, we all have these higher dimensional origins. In a sense, is a God spark or divine spark within the human being. And that element is clothed in different bodies. And as that happens, we experience reality upon different planes of existence. but the true self is beyond the material nature. So in the Zero Point teachings, we explore the issues of consciousness and modern ideas on about physics and their relationship to metaphysics. Now, I was happily going along in my life with such interest until about a year ago when my son introduced me to Loose Change in the movie, and that set off a period of study and learning more and more about the world situation and realizing the terrible, terrible state of humanity at this time on this planet and what terrible things have happening and are happening now on this planet. This has led me to believe that we really are in not an end time, but between 2006 to 2012, I see as a very critical time for the future of humanity, that things are going to either turn one way or another. We're either going to end up in a police society, a totalitarian type society run by the corporate elite of the world, or people are going to wake up and realize what has happened to Western democracy and the values of Western society. And we're going to realize who the true criminal elements have been through the history of time. I think humankind is facing this dire type of situation at this point. And so the last few weeks, last week I had on as a guest Connie Fogel, who's the head of the Canadian Action Party. This is the only federal party in Canada that recognizes the dominance of the corporate elite, how we've been sold out to the corporations, the control of the media. The only party that's willing to look at the truth of 9/11 and demand an investigation of it. So last week was Connie Fogel. I would advise people go to CanadianActionParty.ca, and if you're in Canada, you know, this is our hope. We need to bring these issues into the political arena. And this is the only party I see. It seems to me now that all the other parties have been bought out, and so I kind of see this as our last remaining hope at this time is this Canadian Action Party. And Connie graced us last week with an interview. Okay, so today we have another guest. I'll introduce him in a minute, and we're continuing on this theme. What I was trying to explain is, so although my interest is mystical science and higher dimensions and things like this, I really feel called upon that in this urgent kind of crisis in humanity, we need to be getting the word out there and understanding more and more of the global situation. I see it's like a battlefield. The war, the armies of good and evil are kind of paired off on the battlefield, and it's like a fight for the soul of humankind. Okay, firstly, I'd like to introduce my co-host, James Moffat. Jim, are you there? There has been a little bit of a problem in making our connections here, but I think we're back online, and I was just... introducing Jim, James Moffat in Toronto, Canada. Jim, are you there?
I am.
Okay, I introduced you, Jim, and I turned it over and you weren't there. So.
Yeah, I was never here, right? I got cut off right at the beginning. So were you? I was listening to you looking for me. It was kind of funny, actually. I was listening on my computer.
Oh.
Yeah, but I'm here now.
So I caught, how are you, Jim?
Oh, I'm fine. I caught the end of what you were talking about, I sort of missed the beginning of your presentation.
I just tried to, I always like to mention the heart doctrine and the zero point concept. So I was just trying to bring that back and then comment a little bit on why, you know, we've kind of taken our show off on a different line a little bit, you know, with Connie last week, the Canadian Action Party, and another American activist today who we have on. So we've kind of turned a little bit more to the political side, but I was just saying how much I see that as related to this work of, like, spiritual teaching, of truth in the world. Yeah. So have you been keeping up on the news lately, Jim, at all?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, news is news, sort of. I've kind of gotten almost to the point where I see things when I listen to the news and I watch things. I see how, like, the mainstream media just don't question that they're, all their assumptions about things are so far off that I can't even take it seriously anymore. I prefer kind of to read and to look at other sources to try to, you know, get a more detailed understanding of what's going on, like, you know. And
yeah.
So I follow things, but I find myself just kind of shaking my head when I watch this, just thinking like this is just so far off that it's kind of like living, you know, in Soviet Russia, you know, and you know, everybody knows it's a lie, but you know, everybody goes through the exercise of the pretense of it. Well, obviously everybody doesn't know it's a lie, but for me it's like I just can't take these people very seriously anymore, you know, I on so many different levels. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
I find it very difficult to listen to it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you learn facts of things that are happening, but everything is so distorted, and there's so much that is not even reported on the main media. Like, what did the main media do with the E. Howard Hunt confession? Nothing,
yeah.
You know, and yeah. I don't know if you've been watching Ron Paul, and I hope we get to talk to our guest today. I just see this fellow, Ron Paul, in the U.S., a candidate for the Republican Party. Absolutely amazing man. Amazing individual. I you know, we'll talk to our guest about that today. I just, as far as I see, he's just the hope. I just pray for him. He's such a profoundly eloquent man. I mean, hearing him, it's like...
It
gives me the same feeling of a Kennedy, like John Kennedy again.
He's in the Republican Party?
Yeah. He's one of the 10. You know when they had the 10 candidates,
yeah.
The debate? He
yeah.
polled the highest. Now they're trying to exclude him from the Republican Party because people are responding so overwhelmingly to him. He's amazing, amazing individual. We'll talk to our guest in a minute. We'll bring that in today. But I just see, oh, here's a bright star in the American scene. I just see his candidacy is so, so important. But anyway, so today our guest is Charles Giuliani from the U.S. I hope I've pronounced Charles' name appropriately. I've learned of Charles through being on some of the Pal Talk rooms, and he's involved in a room called 9/11 was an inside job. And from listening, I've listened to him for hours. He's one of those heroes out there on the world stage bringing out this information, trying to wake people up. And I've learned so much from him, and I thought it would just be most informative to have him as a guest today. So, Charles, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome, Charles. Thanks for coming and sharing today.
Yeah, glad to be on. And you did pronounce that name right, by the way.
I did? Good. I didn't know how your name pronounced similarly or how it was different from the former mayor of New York there.
Unfortunately, it's exactly the same.
Oh, is it?
No relation that I know of, though.
Oh. Okay. Charles, please... could you begin by giving people the links to you that people can follow up, and even to your face? Is it Facebook you have, where you have your page there? And can you give that out on there so people can?
Yeah, sure. I've got two books. One is called Piercing the Fog of 9/11. And actually, I now have that. I just put it last night up on lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. So all people have to do is go there and type in Piercing the Fog of 9/11, or you can just type my name in, Charles Giuliani, and that's G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I, and it'll come right up. You can order it there. I'm able to offer it through them a lot cheaper than I have been offering it from my local publisher.
Was that the first book you published, Charles? I know you have one or two others.
Probably the first I published, but not the first I've written. I've written actually a total of 20 books on various different topics.
Wow, wow.
I have another one called The New World Disorder that I'm offering people. That's not yet. In fact, either today or tomorrow, I'm hoping to get that up on lulu.com as well. So if your listeners want to get that, they can be looking for it in the next couple of days. New World Disorder, as opposed to... the New World Order. That
I like that. It's so appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. They want us to trust them with a world system of government when they're already showing how outrageously corrupt they are now without one, and we're supposed to trust them with one? You know, they can't even fake it and give us the appearance as though they're making an honest attempt at peace and, you know, defending human rights. They can't even do that now without world government. And we're supposed to trust them. It's incredible.
I mean, it's funny. I think I've always been sympathetic to the idea of world government and the United Nations, but it's just who that world government is, not a group of criminal psychopaths in the corporate world. That's the problem. The idea of there being a world body isn't so unreasonable, I don't think.
Well, the whole concept is actually it's a great idea. It really is. The problem is, it's never worked, and quite honestly, it's never going to work because man's nature is too corrupt. And this is what I pointed out the other night. We had a guy come in. He was a big lefty, a big liberal. And, you know, he had some great ideas. But his solution to the world's problems is, yes, we've got to have a world government. And I said, but you're playing right into their hands. This is exactly what they want. Well, no, we've got to have the right kind of world government. I says, no, you don't understand. Any world government, even if it started out on the right premise, the reason it's so dangerous is every government corrupts. It's just a matter of time. You know, Thomas Jefferson once says, every 100 years or so, the liberty must be refreshed with the blood of the patriot. Because the system put in place corrupts. You know, once unscrupulous politicians, and if they're not unscrupulous, from the start, they will become that, or their offspring, or their successors, And once they realize, hey, we got a good thing going, we can take these people for a ride. Look at this, sound asleep, the potential for corruption is always going to be there. And so this is why world government, the whole concept of it, is so dangerous. It sounds like a great idea, and if it wasn't the corruption factor there, it would be.
Yeah.
But the problem is, over time, the corruption will eventually settle in. And if not from within, from without. The big corporations will see, hey, let's buy off these politicians and get them to advance our interests. And so my point is, if you had a good system of world government established, again, it would just be a matter of time. And once it goes corrupt, there is no place to hide because the whole planet is imbued with this system and there's nowhere you can run to escape from it and find solace from it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, what shocked me most about waking up was to realize the extent of that corruption. It's like the whole system has been corrupted, the whole of the American, both parties. Like, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. No one speaks the truth anymore. Or the media. In Canada, it's the same. All the governments have been complicit in covering up the mass murders in 9/11.
Yeah, and any of your listeners that have not yet looked into this, let me warn you, if you've got a weak stomach or if you have a tendency toward depression, you might want to wait until you can get a psychologist or psychiatrist assistance, get your mental health back before you look into this, because this is very, very, it's not pleasant news.
No.
To find out just how bad things have gotten, I'm not telling this because it's good news, but I'm spreading this message because it's so bad that we must become aware of it, because if we don't become aware of it and do something collectively to stop it, we're going to enter that very system of global scale corruption that I was just talking about, global government run by absolute mass murdering, lying fascist pigs, thieves.
Yeah.
That are raping the planet, lining their pockets with billions and trillions of dollars that they've stolen from the working class in every country around the world. And it'll be a system of enslavement such as the world has never seen before, and there'll be no escaping it. They will be able, and in fact already are able, to track every move you make, monitor everything you do, every phone call you make. They can pierce through your walls with high-tech infrared surveillance cameras. You can have your shades down, you can have your lights off, it doesn't matter. They can see you while you sleep. They can count how many times you breathe by the hot air that comes out of your nostrils through your walls. Infrared cameras can see this stuff.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Yeah, people have no idea how they've been doing this for so long. I mean, it's not just something that's come upon us in the last 5 years, but there's been that corrupt element I mean, you could go back to Truman inviting the Nazis over after the war. I think the whole setup began at that point.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
I think you said once on there that the Nazis didn't lose the war. They just had to move or something.
They had to relocate, yeah.
They had to relocate. When Charles, did you become aware of, like, the questions around 9/11? Did it hit you immediately, or was it something that you just realized over time?
Yeah, I was aware of government corruption and this whole push for the New World Order around 1992 is when I started looking into it.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, and it was quite a shocker because just a year before, I was glued to the TV set praising our troops as they were blowing away hundreds of thousands of Iraqis with the smart bombs, and
yeah.
I thought it was such a cool thing. Wow, yeah, we're bringing freedom. We're getting rid of that evil tyrant, and, you know, you could see the bombs that had cameras on them, and I remember cheering. I was excited, you know, watching
yeah.
these buildings blow up, and what a shock it was to find out that, you know, we were the bad guy.
Yeah.
These Iraqi citizens were innocent people getting blown away that had not done anything wrong. And it was just such a, you know, a shock for me to discover this. Not long after that, I had enrolled in college. I decided I was going to go into the ministry. I was incredibly gullible at that time as far as that goes. And but I'm glad I did because I got behind the scenes. I got to find out how corrupt organized religion was. And once I saw that was it. I realized, okay, if this is corrupt too, the whole thing, everything across the board must be completely, hopelessly lost. And sure enough, I found out academia is completely controlled.
Yeah.
Now it started making sense, you know.
Yeah.
To have a corrupt system like this work, you've got to have control of all avenues of public information. And
yeah.
the media as well, I found out. I'm like, son of a gun, they got that control too and have had that control for a long time. This is how they've gotten away with this.
Yeah. They're masterful planners. I mean, why anyone would want to be so devious and cruel like that is beyond me. But
their plottings are very far-reaching. They had planned this out a long time ago. They had anticipated that, yeah, we're going to get trouble from the media. We're going to get trouble from the churches. We're going to get trouble from across the board, academia, professors. We got to make sure we got control of them. So this is what they were busy doing while we slept.
Yeah.
And they pumped us with propaganda in the media about what a great country, you know, we're the best country in the world. There they were, suckering us to fighting phony wars, you know, in the Cold War, containing communism. It had nothing to do with containing communism. Communism wasn't expanding. Soviet Union had all they could do to manage their affairs at home. They tried so desperately to keep up with us militarily that's what finally caused their collapse by the late 80s. They had invested so much in, nuclear warheads, their economy fell apart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like the situation the United States is in at the moment, where they've invested, like, they have such huge, huge debts now to China.
Yeah, we're at the point of collapse. We're just like the Roman Empire. We're spread too far, too thin, spent way too much money. The bulk of our national debt has been the result of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
But, you know, the irony is they don't even care. Because
no.
what they're looking at is world government. They just used us like a Gillette razor. They're pretty much done with us now. They're ready to throw us away. Now they can turn to China and have China pick up where we left off. You know, it doesn't matter to them. They're not operating on behalf of the U.S. or any other country.
No.
They're just draining us, our financial and military resources, and when they're done, they'll spit us out and move on to the next country. It's world government they want. It's not any nation that's seeking, you know, it's imperialism, but not national imperialism.
Yeah.
It's elite imperialism is what it is.
Yeah. When 9/11 happened, did you write?
Oh,
away?
Yeah, to get back to the incident. Yeah, I'm sorry. By that time, by 2001, I had done, you know, a substantial amount of research. I was totally aware of the elitists pulling the strings behind the scenes, setting up world government. So when this happened, I knew. In fact, I had read Zbigniew Brzezinski's, I've been paying close attention to him for a while because I know that for years, everything that man writes about and talks about, he's telling you in advance what's coming. And sure enough, you know, in 1997, in his book, The Grand Chessboard, page 211, he stated that in coming years, you know, it's going to be necessary for the U.S. to go into Eurasia, i.e. Afghanistan. We need to build a pipeline across that region to exploit the oil and natural gas in the Caspian Sea to remain the dominant force in the world, blah, blah, blah. He said, in order to do this, to get the American public behind us in support of this agenda, we're going to have a massive, widely perceived direct external threat. He actually used the word perceived. And that's all 9/11 was. So I knew they were planning something.
Yeah.
And I knew that UNICAL had been busy trying to get the pipeline built across Afghanistan.
Oh.
The Taliban decided in 1999 to break off the deal and to go with an Argentine company, Brightus, instead.
Oh.
So immediately they began petitioning Congress to invade Afghanistan. You know, they had invested about $10 billion along with other companies like Enron and Bechtel and Halliburton. And
so they'd made all those investments before the two towers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see. And then Afghanistan was inclined towards associating with Argentina.
Right. So, I mean, they had, you know, channeled, cut through mountainsides and done a lot of surveillance and, you know, all the prep work was done. It was just a matter now of building the pipeline. Taliban said, nope, all that money they invested now. They said, nope, we want to go with Brightus, offered them a cheaper deal. And so now they were enraged. All that money was spent for nothing, and now they're going to lose all that oil, you know, and natural gas.
Yeah.
So that's when the petition began. So, you know, people need to realize that not only was the Iraq war planned long in advance, and we know that from the Project New American Century document, September of 2000, you know, we need to have a new Pearl Harbor-type event. Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl Speed, Abrams, Jeb Bush, all of these guys wrote up that document. But they were also planning the Afghan war. As a matter of fact, in June of 2001, just 3 months before 9/11, the State Department's website carried a statement by a State Department official warning the Taliban, we're promising you a carpet of bombs or a carpet of gold. It's up to you. In other words, accept our deal. We'll give you a carpet of gold.
Yeah.
But continue to go with Brightus and carpet of bombs. So 3 months later, here comes 9/11, and bang, we were in there the very next month. And, you know, the Brits were in there before we were. They had launched, they had sent tens of thousands of troops. In fact, it was the biggest military troop buildup since the Falkland Islands War. So you got to wonder, you know, why did they have all these troops built up over there?
They knew it was coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And like that BBS... that BBS clip where the reporter, that is so funny, where she's talking about Building 7 coming down, it's still there.
It's there, right behind her as she's talking. Yeah,
the whole thing is set up. It's so, what amazes me is how there's such absolutely overwhelming evidence.
Oh, yeah.
Proven any court of law before any sane judge, half-sane judge, if there are any, this whole thing has been a criminal conspiracy, international criminal conspiracy.
Oh, they left such a huge trail of popcorn behind them that you have to be deaf, dumb, and blind, or else a traitor to not see it. And that's all I think these defenders of the official story are anymore at this point. They're traitors.
Well, they are traitors. I mean, they're really complicit in the mass murder of thousands of Americans.
Right.
They're sacrificing American soldiers. I feel so sorry for the soldiers, you know, people who go over there, like, with well-intentioned for the most part, eh?
Right.
But they've been deceived, and it's terrible. I seeing some of these politicians, you know, their fake sympathy for the soldiers, it makes me sick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Laura Bush came out and said, nobody suffers more over Iraq than my husband and me.
Yeah.
Oh, give me a break. I don't see their daughters over there fighting. You know, they haven't lost any kids. How could they possibly be suffering more? That's an insult to the mothers and fathers who've lost their kids over there.
Yeah, and I mean, they know the deceit of the whole thing, the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
But
how about you, Jim? Just to check in with Jim. Jim, when do you think you really began to realize around 9/11 how that was a con? Like, I was completely naive till last summer, I'm ashamed to say.
Well,
my 15-year-old kid showed me a movie.
I guess for me, you know, I was kind of, there was a French book put out quite shortly after saying that 9/11 was done by the CIA, and I was kind of dismissive of it. And I mean, this is coming from somebody who, you know, is... I'm not under any illusions about American power and where it comes from and about the control of the economic elites. I mean, you know, Kennedy assassination, Korea, Vietnam, you know, you can go through the whole century, basically. But I just didn't believe it. But then I think what really struck me was I think it was, well, I read a couple of things that, well, one thing that really bothered me, and, you know, it just struck me as being so odd, was where was the American Air Force on September 11th? I'm thinking, like, you've got the most sophisticated military machine in the world. When Payne Stewart, the golfer's plane went off course a couple of years ago, because, you know, they were deprived of oxygen, apparently, in the cabin of the airplane, there were jets up in minutes, you know, after they failed to respond. That's standard operating procedure by the FAA. How can all these planes be hijacked within, you know, minutes of all these Air Force bases on the eastern seaboard, and not one American fighter aircraft is up there? That struck me, like, right away. I thought, yeah, there's something, you know, there's something really strange going on here. So I had that sort of suspicion, but I think it would, for me, when I read David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor, that really, I mean, because he just goes through different scenarios and different levels of complicity and just asks open-minded questions and points out all sorts of anomalies. I also read Michael Ruppert's book, Crossing the Rubicon, and he frames it in terms of motive, means, and opportunity, and mm-hmm. really when you start to analyze it and think of it in those terms, it's open and shut in my mind now. I have no yeah. doubt that they're...
And then you look at all the criminality that has been going on, all the indictments.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
they've got the
lack
of people. Yeah, I mean, what hinders you at that point? You look at the collapse of the towers, every single symptom of a controlled demolition is present there. Every
yeah.
single one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what Charles is pointing out, too, when he's talking about Brzezinski, because I was just reading about this, too. There's a quote in his book. He says America, he's talking about the need to control Eurasia, and especially, like, it starts with Afghanistan. And, I mean, that's the thing, is that these guys aren't trying to hide their motives. It's in the Project for a New American Century, too. And he says...
They boast about it.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. I mean, they're quite explicit about it. There's no great conspiracy in terms of, like, this is done behind... These guys publish it. I mean, it's not like you have to search for it.
And, you know, Brzezinski also said that it's, to continue this kind of policy, invading countries, blah, 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 you know, coming out with false pretenses, he says that it's not going to be able to be maintained indefinitely. In other words, the public's going to eventually wake up.
Gotcha.
So he said it's going to be necessary to curtail civil liberties at home. We cannot remain democratic at home and be autocratic abroad. So he's calling for...
Wow, he says that.
Yeah.
In the grand chessboard.
Right.
And he also says to carry it under the guise of keeping peace. And then here's the quote that I really like. He says, as America becomes an increasingly multicultural society, it may find it more difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy issues, except in the circumstances of a truly massive and widely perceived direct external threat.
Yeah,
well,
page 211.
If that doesn't say it all, I mean, 9/11 is perfect. It's like, what's the Latin phrase? Qui bono? Who benefits? You know, that's how it has to look at this. This plays right into these guys' hands, like the Project for a New American Century, as Charles said. All these guys got exactly what they wanted from 9/11. Now, you don't have to be cynical or a conspiracy theorist to figure out that something stinks here really badly.
And, you know, again, if people want to look into this, I've got the research all put together. It's fully documented. Just go to lulu.com and look for Piercing the Fog of 9/11 or type my name in Charles Giuliani. But, you know, I give quotes from Bush, from Condoleezza, from Ashcroft, from Rumsfeld, all of them in the weeks following 9/11 referred to 9/11 as, quote, a great opportunity.
Yeah.
While the rest of the nation's mourning, they're celebrating.
Yeah.
It was Christmas morning and still is. I mean, they're still capitalizing on this thing. And then you hear about all the ground, the cleanup crew members at Ground Zero getting cancer. So over 300 of them now have cancer. Over 40 now have died from cancer directly related to this. And here's the government adding insult to injury. Not only do they lie to them, but now, you know, now you have the EPA head there. She's coming out and, you know, she's refusing to testify. And they lied. They told them the air was clean, and they went in there without any protection at all. And they were breathing all those deadly toxins in. And to add insult to injury, back in November, the government actually forbade coroners examining the victims who are dying from making a connection between what they breathed at Ground Zero and their death. Look into other matters, but don't look into that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, it's like the Gulf War syndrome. They deny that. They deny the effect mm-hmm. of the depleted uranium on American troops. Even having depleted uranium weapons with you is affecting those soldiers.
Yeah. They don't care. I mean, these, you know, And then they're cutting back on the benefits, too, for soldiers, because they know in coming years they're going to come home with deadly tumors from the DU, and they don't want to have to pay for that.
It was the same with Agent Orange in Vietnam, too, you know. I mean, there's no doubt that that stuff was incredibly lethal and toxic, and, you know, they had an incredible fight to try to get anything, any benefits at all, to recognize that that posed any kind of danger. Here's a quote from George Bush, married to Laura, who suffered so much with about the war in Iraq, from December 12, 2001, 3 months after 9/11. All in all, it's been a fabulous year for Laura and me, George W. Bush. That's in Gary Trudeau's book, Peace Out, Dog, Tales from Ground Zero.
Wow. Makes me think of Barbara, what she said after Katrina about the poor people. Well, they're poor anyway, so this is working out quite well for them. You can't be kidding. This is like the French Revolution, let them eat cake, you know.
Yeah, you got our own Marie Antoinette.
The arrogance. Yeah, yeah. It's unbelievable.
That's exactly. I read another thing from her the other day, Barbara Bush, too, which is equally insensitive and stupid. And I thought, yeah, this is the modern let them eat cake. You know, this is the American version of it. And you know.
About when Bush was giving that talk at the White House, and he's joking about the WMDs. Whoops, no weapons of mass destruction under there. Whoops, no weapons of mass destruction over here. The very lie that got the soldiers into the war in the first place—that's making, you know, causing them to die and get sick and get blown arms blown off. He's sitting there joking about it.
Yeah.
The arrogance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just unspeakable, the things that have been done over the last 50 years are unspeakable. It's just terrible.
Now, the old saying, you know, those who don't study history are condemned to repeat it.
You know,
see what's happened in the past. I mean, they're following Adolf Hitler to a T. Everything this man did, you know, the rigged elections, the Reichstag, and then taking advantage of that to pass the Enabling Act, which is equivalent to the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the lies, the propaganda, the control of the media, everything. It's all there.
It's astonishing. And even now, like, the Prescott Bush was the main American financier of the Nazis. That's come out.
Oh, yeah, the grandfather. Yeah, so there's direct connections with fascism right there.
Well, he was charged after the war, but then those charges were dropped.
Sure, he had his little friends in high places to take care of him.
Yeah, and then Truman let in, like, 400 Nazi rocket scientists and 500 Nazi mind control
Operation
experts.
Paperclip, yeah. They brought the scientists.
And the OSS recruited members of the SS and the SA after the war, too. You know, even before the war was over, people like Patton were urging Truman to start World War III, to attack the Russians immediately.
Yeah,
that was the whole thing. It was in a lot of circles, it was just thought, like, you know, we're fighting the wrong guys here. We should join the Nazis and fight the Russians, you know, and this is the opportunity to do it.
The irony is that all during the war, they were helping the Russians. In fact, they sent United States Treasury plates over.
Yeah.
For them to print unlimited amounts of American bills, we'll never know how much inflation they created, how many billions of dollars.
Wow, really?
And, you know, just to fund the war effort. And then, after the war, they left them in power deliberately because they needed an enemy now to justify the post-war imperialism.
Yeah.
Many KGB agents have come forward over the years and said, we were buddies with the CIA. We were planning together back and forth. And, I mean, the whole Cold War was a scam. That's why they bopped Kennedy off, because he was going to shut down the whole thing. He was going to make peace with Russia and shut down the Vietnam War and dismantle the CIA. And he had to go.
Yeah.
That was their bread and butter.
I had a question about one. I saw a little documentary on YouTube or somewhere about Israel, and it was saying that in the year before his assassination, Kennedy had called the Israeli ambassador to the White House and demanded that Israel abide by the UN inspections.
Oh, yeah, he was going to cut funding off.
They finally agreed to that, but there's a facility in Barum, I think it's called, in Israel, and it was 6 floors deep, and they sealed off the bottom 5 floors, and they invited the UN inspectors over, and they inspected the top floor, but they didn't know that there were 5 levels below that. Are you familiar with that, Charles?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He angered Israel quite. He wanted to cut off all funding to them. He was threatening them. You know, we're gonna dry up the well. And of course, they would have dried up in the wind and blown away, you know, if that had happened.
And who was it he fired from at one point when he, was it, who were the two figures he fired from, was it the Joint Chiefs of Staff or?
Well, he fired in the CIA, he fired Alan Dulles, Charles Cabell, that was the director and the deputy director. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, then they turned around and appointed Alan Dulles to head up
the
investigation of his assassination.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, come on. Conflict of interest or what? It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's like Janet Reno, you know, she's the one that gave the orders for the CS gas to be used and the inflammatory devices to be used in, when the Waco conflagration blew open. And then she appoints a committee to investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
Bush, as it turns out, appointed all the commission members for the 9/11 commission. In fact, his first choice, of course, was Henry Kissinger, a renowned international war criminal.
Yeah.
I mean, and keep in mind, they didn't even formulate this thing until 14 months later, and only because the public was, you know, especially the family members of 9/11 victims, they were enraged. They were pushing for this thing nonstop. So they finally gave in 14 months later, after all the debris had been removed and destroyed. But even then, he appoints all the members, so the thing was rigged from the start. But understand, too, even though he handpicked all the members, he still was leery that information might leak out to the public he doesn't want them to have. So listen to what he does. He defunds them by multiple millions of dollars. He cuts back the time allotted to them. He refuses to offer them documents unless he personally looks over them or his staff. And the few that he does release, most of the material is blacked out. He doesn't give them access to certain facilities. Certain staff cannot be interviewed unless there's a State Department representative present telling them what they can and can't say. Then he refuses to meet with them. Finally, he agrees after pressure, but Cheney has to be present with him. The proceedings must be private, not public. They can't be recorded in any shape or fashion, and they're not to be under oath when they give their testimony.
Wow.
Yeah,
all those were conditions for the 9/11 commission.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And that's when I really started to smell a rat, was that when they refused to cooperate, the only, as Charles says, you know, the only reason that there was ever even an investigation, Bush vehemently tried to deny the legitimacy of it, and only is because of the pressure from the families, the victims' families, that first of all, and then they appoint Kissinger, who, as he says, war criminal Kissinger, talking about a guy who belongs in prison, and then Kissinger had business dealings with the Bin Ladens, of course, so did Bush, so, you know, I mean, talk about the letting the Fox, you know, investigate what happened at the hen house. I mean, it's completely ludicrous, the whole thing, and then talk about, it's just Nixon all over again. Oh, the president won't testify, and then, oh, the president will have a private meeting, nobody will be under oath. I mean, give me a break. I mean,
and then
a whitewash.
It emerges that Zelikow, the executive director, he played even a more key role than Keane himself,
because he decided
what was going to be viewed and not viewed and considered as evidence. Anyway, you go to Wikipedia, and they quote from him. Zelikow admits that his area of expertise in college, what he studied most, was how to formulate public opinion such that the formed opinion would remain in place decades after the event had passed that the opinion was formulated of.
Wow.
In other words, he's the Goebbels of the Bush administration. I mean, he's, you know, the propaganda artist.
Well, it's still, the thing that really amazes me is that, that 5 years after 9/11, that a majority of the American public still believes Saddam Hussein, you know, was involved in 9/11.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's just from telling the same lie over and over again as Goebbels, you know, as the basic premise of the Nazis. You know,
what did Goebbels say? I like that quote. If you
tell a lie often enough, people will believe it.
The big lie, long enough, often enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, that's been the case. There is a turning of the tide, though. I'm very pleased to see this. In just the past few years, the television media has lost about 60% of its audience in the United States, and the printed press about 40%. People are turning to the Internet and other alternative sources. Rosie O'Donnell, I got to tip my hat to her a few weeks ago. She came out and said that it's frightening. She said, you cannot believe what you're told by our press, our media. She says that they lie to us about everything. You have to look outside this country to see what's going on. And she says that includes this network. Well,
that was amazing, though. I guess that's ABC that The View is on.
Yeah.
They allowed that through, and they allow they're allowing, like, Rosie to continue.
Well, on Thursday, she's having the makers of Loose Change, as well as Willie Rodriguez, She's going to have them on.
Yeah.
Wow. On Thursday?
Yeah, this Thursday.
Oh,
on the View.
Oh, this Thursday. Yeah, they had an amazing view view this last week where one of the ladies, I'm not sure who it was, the Jewish lady, she spoke about Ron Paul, and they put Ron Paul up there, his picture after the debate. And she was saying, like, what integrity he seemed to have and what an alternate view. They were pushing Ron Paul.
Yeah.
I was shocked by
that's
that.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. In spite of the attempts by the mainstream media to boycott him and the GOP to forbid him from participating in the debate, it's backfiring on them. And people are actually seeing that, hey, yeah, this is a scam. You know, this is the only candidate that is actually addressing real issues, proposing real solutions. And that's all you get from the other ones is terrorism, 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 terrorism.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're the terrorists. But they're using terrorism to try to sucker the public. But I think people are catching on.
He's an absolutely brilliant orator.
Yeah.
Is he not, Charles?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm absolutely blown away by him. I spent this morning on YouTube looking at different clips in the media of him speaking. It's like, wow, someone who speaks truth.
Yeah, he's really good. I just hope I don't hear about his plane crashing or committing suicide. Those are the two favorite methods of elimination of political dissidents.
The MK Ultra must be away plotting away something there, you know, or maybe a deranged fellow to come in and. I mean, that's a huge threat, and I know he would obviously be aware of it.
I mean, that's how they get rid of Senator Wellstone.
Yeah.
He flies home to campaign for re-election. His plane conveniently crashes, and with that, the majority went to the Republicans and in the Senate. And, you know, he was going to stop the Iraq War. The Iraq War went through fine now. It was with flying colors with him gone. He was going to block the passage of the Homeland Security Act. That went through fine just a week or two later after his death. It's just a little too convenient.
Well, I wasn't aware of that.
Well, of 100 people in the Senate, probably the best person goes down in a plane crash. It makes you kind of wonder, doesn't it? You know, I mean,
yeah.
I got about 10 candidates I'd like to put on a plane in the American Senate that if I thought it was going to crash. But, you know, Paul Wellstone would have been the last, I would have thought, you know. And
he was flying home to campaign for re-election, too.
Yeah.
And the timing was just impeccable.
Kind of suspicious, to say the least. And as you say, that's been a favorite way of getting rid of people that need to be getting rid of in several third world countries. But
I mean, look at Gary Webb. He was a guy that was investigating the CIA drug laundering and everything, and drug trafficking, I should say. And in December of 2005, they said he committed suicide, but the coroner's report showed that there were two bullet wounds in his head. How do you shoot yourself twice in the head?
Do you know about him, Chris?
No, I didn't.
Well, he wrote a series of articles in the San Jose Mercury News about how the CIA had basically created the crack epidemic by working with cocaine smugglers and bringing it into black neighborhoods in the United States. And he was vilified in the mainstream American media, and he was attacked left, right, and center and told, you know, and guess what? Turns out he was exactly right. And
Well, you know, 2 months later, there was another, quote, suicide. Hunter S. Thompson, I'm sure you know him, another political dissident. They said that was suicide, but interestingly, just a couple of days before, a friend of his that works for the Canadian Globe and Mail up there, in fact, this was in the Canadian Globe and Mail just a couple of days after he died. He wrote an article. He said, you know, he called me the night before his death, and he told me, he says, I just wanted you to know, he says, I'm working on a story about the collapse of the Twin Towers.
Wow.
And I've got some information that's going to blow the lid off of this and prove that it was controlled demolition. He says, well, the next day, he told him, he says, I just want you to know this, though. He says, because I think, he says, I'm being followed. I think they're going to do something. They're probably going to make it look like suicide. And the next day,
Wow. Do you know who was it Rick Slootin by any chance?
You know, I can't remember the name, but again, it's in my book.
Okay. Wow.
Which one, Piercing the Fog of 9/11?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a quote in there from the
What's your main thrust in your book? Is it looking at the evidences for it being a staged event, or is it more looking at the political background and
Well, I tried to give as much blanket coverage in the shortest amount of space as possible. It's just basically a collection of quotes. I do put my comments in there, but probably 90% of it is just quote after quote after quote. And I try to give the whole blanket coverage. I cover the events of the day and how the, you know, the lies of where Bush said he was, what he was doing, where Rumsfeld said he was, and the total lack of response. I show how Mineta, the Secretary of Defense, lied, not lied, I mean, showed how Cheney has lied, you know, that he gave orders for a stand down. That's why the Pentagon was hit.
Yeah, twice I heard that reported.
Right. And I get background stuff, too, how they were planning the Iraq and or Afghan war long in advance. And, you know, Rumsfeld even produced a document in early 2001 called where he called for a new space Pearl Harbor, very similar to the PNAC. Of course, he's a member of PNAC.
Yeah.
And he was petitioning Congress that morning in the Pentagon. There were several Congress people that were in this conference room, and he's like, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to convince you guys we need more more funding, you know, for defense. But he said, I'm telling you, there's going to be an event sometime in the next 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 months, and it's going to convince you guys we need more funding. Of course, he must have meant 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 minutes, because it was about that long later that the events started unfolding. And later that night, He's speaking to the same delegation, and he says, can you see now why I was saying we need more funding, if that isn't obvious?
Have you, Charles, are you familiar with the work of Nafees Mossadegh Ahmed?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, because I've been reading his book, The War on Freedom, and you know, I read several books now where they talk about advanced warnings, but I think this is the most detailed presentation of the advanced warnings about what was going to happen and in the intelligence communities. I mean,
they're all over the place.
There's no doubt that the FBI, the CIA, everybody knew that not only was the United States going to be attacked, but how? I mean, and even what the targets were going to be. The World Trade Center was repeatedly mentioned by various intelligence sources, both to the Americans and by the Americans themselves. And there's no question in my mind, after reading the variety of material, that they knew that this was going to happen. At the very least,
I'm surprised he's not in Guantanamo Bay, especially with a name like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, how's this guy walking around?
But, you know, I'm convinced that all these prior knowledge reports were simply, the CIA putting this stuff out there ahead of time so they could later call upon it. And if worse came to worse, if caught with their pants down, they can simply say, oh, well, yeah, it's just incompetence. Yeah, we should have been on top of this. We had all the... But it still takes attention away from the fact that they did it. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they did this with the Kennedy.
It's often disinformation, like, to put
us
off the
exactly.
lead. Like, it sounds as though they have some culpability for not seeing the warning signs, but it's the warning signs are still coming by the...
But that doesn't imply that, you know, that the FBI and CIA operatives who...
Right.
have come out with this stuff are lying. They honestly believe it was...
Right. As plausible deniability, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. They did the same thing with Kennedy. You know, they had like three Oswald lookalikes. They were sending them out to firing ranges and shooting at, you know, targets and saying, die, Kennedy, die, you know.
Yeah, taking cars out for test drives and driving erratically. Only problem is that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't know how to drive.
Did you know that he didn't know how to shoot either? In addition to the E. Howard Hunt tape thing, just the past day or two, Thursday, I think it came out on ABC and several other major media, that FBI forensics experts now, or ballistics experts, are coming out and saying that the evidence, like they didn't know this all along, but still, it's just another coffin in the nail of the official Kennedy story, that, you know, the evidence for the ballistics doesn't match up. There was more than one assassin. There had to be. There was more than one gun being used. So they've actually come out now and made that statement.
Yeah. The FBI is saying this?
Yeah. He's retired now, of course.
Okay.
But a former top FBI scientist said that the ballistics doesn't match.
Gee, well, apparently, what's his name? Vincent Bugliosi just wrote a book for 20 years that weighs about 18 pounds saying that Oswald did it. So I think we're supposed to... I suppose we take his word for it, that he's proved that all the conspiracy theorists are wrong.
He was exactly what he said he was, a patsy.
Yeah, exactly.
He recognized it right away.
He was either Army or intelligence or CIA, and he was out there as an agent to infiltrate these right-wing groups,
Well, they set Ruby up, too. I
they
think
set
Ruby
him
got...
up, and then they set Ruby up. Yeah, exactly.
He thought they were going to take care of him. And
I guess then, really, then the assassination of Kennedy constituted a coup.
Sure, absolutely.
Well,
just like 9/11, another coup.
I've been trying to think lately, like, I always thought, you know, U.S. and Canada, we had democracies. I'm trying to think of a new word for what we really have. Like, we have, like, seemingly democratic, but is there, does someone have, like, a corporate democracy or some other term? What do we live in now? We obviously isn't a democracy.
The fascist dictatorial regime is... It's an oligarchy, basically, if you really wanted to give a name to it.
A kinder, gentler police state.
But literally, it's an oligarchy. It's run by a small cabal, a small group of individuals who call the shots, and only the illusion is given that the general public has any say at all.
Yeah. I think we live in... A friend of mine brought this up a couple of years ago, and he said, you know, we live in fascist states because, really, I mean, fascism not in the, you know, in the sense that, you know, you're trying to characterize somebody like comparing them to the Nazis, but fascism is the marriage of an economic and political elite in a military industrialized state which practices imperialism abroad and suppresses liberty at home. And I mean,
wow.
I would say that we live in a fascist state.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's a very good description of the United States now. I think it's a fascist country. And, you know, everything else is just kind of the shadow play. We live in a shadow play democracy, you know. There's no real substance to it.
Yeah.
I love the cartoon. It was just after the Iraq War broke out, and it was showed a guy sitting on the couch, you know, he's watching his TV, and there's Bush on the TV, and he says, we're bringing freedom to the Iraqi people. We're going to set up free elections, and we're going to have peace in the Middle East. And so the guy's yelling out to his wife, hey, honey, pack your bags. We're moving to Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the hypocrisy of it is just so, it's in your face. I mean,
the devastation of that country, you know, it's likely approaching a million dead now over there, and two million have had to have left the country, and another 2 million, they say, are homeless and been displaced within Iraq. I mean, an absolute incredible.
Yeah, poverty is increasing exponentially.
Of that country.
Well, at least Bush told the truth about that. He wanted to model Iraq after us over here. So, you know, the poverty is rising tremendously. So, just like over here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing also, like, how they're, in a way, tearing down U.S. as a society, like, as an independent. I mean, they're undermining the middle class. The economy is about to collapse. The American currency could fall dramatically.
Every policy is designed to dismantle this economy and destroy the middle class. Yeah. And that Pan-American Union thing has got to be the biggest scam to come down the pike. And most people don't even know what it is. They've never heard of it.
Yeah, actually, I'm one of them. Can you say something about that Pan-American Union? Or not, but this isn't the North American Union, or is that...
Well, it's the same thing, yeah, Pan-American,
North
American,
yeah.
It's the equivalent of the European Union. It's destroying national sovereignty of Canada, Mexico, and the United States. There's not going to be any borders by 2010 if people don't wake up to stop this.
Yeah.
And they're going to dumb our wages down to third world status. This is where we're going. We're going to go down to Mexico's status as an economy.
Yeah,
there'll be no more American dollar, no more Canadian dollars. It's going to be the AMERO, the equivalent of the euro. Your economy's going to be hijacked. Your very governmental system is going to be gone. And this is all done on behalf of the elites again, the big international corporations and the financiers. This is going to make things easy for them. Low wages, and you know, everyone else is going to suffer.
Despite the fact that the overwhelming majority of people in all three countries don't want it.
It's
something
it
like 90% of Americans don't. Haven't about 30 or 40 states passed legislation against the North American Union?
There's impeachment resolutions being passed, too, by state after state, but nothing's getting done about it because we got a bunch of sellouts in Congress that have been bought and paid for long ago, you know, most of them. Very few exceptions to that rule.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have no problem passing this legislation that's going to shaft us because it doesn't affect them. They're insulated from all these laws.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Yeah, I remember hearing an American congressman on when NAFTA was signed talking about it. He was one of the few opponents of it. And he said, you know, he went through all the presidents that have supported it, going back to, I think, like maybe even FDR, Truman, that everybody has been on the same page, you know, either pushing for or supporting, you know, North American free trade. And he says, what does that tell you about the two parties?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, when it gets down to cases, they're really about the same thing, which is representing the corporate interests that, you know, that want to maximize their profits, and they couldn't care less about, you know, about the average person, and that's why, you know, the middle class is being destroyed. They want to get rid of all unions, all regulations on you know, corporate activity, so that they can rape and plunder, and not have to answer to anybody. And I mean,
well,
they are diseased. You know,
to play it fair, there is a difference between the Republicans and Democrats. It's their rhetoric.
That's the only difference.
Well, this is going to be absolutely fascinating to see what happens with Ron Paul. Like, he's just a bright star out there.
I love it. All their attempts. In fact, Zogby, you know, Zogby is usually respected as a great... but this is what they do. You know, they'll get Zogby out there, and they'll have them produce all these accurate polls so people will... you know, put faith in them and trust them and think that they're reliable. And then all of a sudden, when something big like this comes along and they really need some help, okay, Zogby, come through for us. They came out with a poll the other day stating that Ron Paul has 0% support. when in reality, he's winning all the debates.
Yeah.
You know, you can toss Zogby out. They're a bunch of liars, too. I mean, it's you know, these polling things, they're a scam. It's all designed to warp public opinion. And, you know, unfortunately, it works with some people. They'll see that and think, well, I thought he was a good speaker and said some sensible things, but if nobody's supporting him, I guess I'm not going to support him anymore either.
Yeah, people are influenced by that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
True. Well, is this a current... This is going on now that certain Republicans are trying to exclude him from the ongoing debates.
Yeah. Well, they tried to ban him from the South Carolina debates, but they had a flooding of phone calls and faxes, so they backed away from that. Their every attempt is being blocked. They know that the eyes are upon them now, you know, in this advent of the Internet, and that's one of the reasons why they're really trying to shut that down.
Yeah. And those brave souls on The View, they're really coming across. Like Rosie O'Donnell is, I mean, she's pretty dramatic.
Except that blonde, I'm waiting for Rosie to pop that blonde one of these days.
Oh, isn't she terrible?
I don't even, she's unbelievable. Typical neocon.
Is she intentionally lying, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. All the hardcore Bush supporters. In fact, she came out the other day. Rosie was talking about the collapse of Building 7. I got to rush into the other room. My cord's going to die on me here. There we go. I think I'm still there, right?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, she came out on The View the other day talking about Building 7, you know, how it obviously came down by... it had to be controlled demolition, she says. I mean, there's just no way a building can collapse like that. And all of a sudden, the dippy blonde there, she's like, well, no, that makes sense why it came down. It was the volcanic force of the...
I heard that. Yeah, volcano.
Volcano. And so she says, what volcano? There's no volcano in New York. These guys are laughable. She was hoping that throwing that in there, that, you know, it would sound like some scientific term, you know, and it would sound believable. Oh, man. She didn't study her script very good that morning, I guess.
Charles, do you know who Rob Bowman is?
I've heard of him.
He's the lieutenant colonel. He was an American military lieutenant colonel who, under Ronald Reagan, he was...
Oh, right. Yeah.
The guy
I know.
Who came up with the term Star Wars.
And he
resigned when he realized that it wasn't a defensive system, it was an offensive system.
Yep.
He ran for Congress in Florida in the last congressional election. I never heard anything about what happened to him. I mean, I presume he didn't win. I don't think he's a member of the House of Representatives, but do you know anything about that?
Yeah, he's kind of disappeared off the radar. I'm not exactly sure. I'm sure that, you know, they smoked him out like they did with McKinney, Cynthia McKinney.
Yeah.
And then also Nick Berg's father was running. I never heard any more about him. He's disappeared off the radar as well. Probably got some death threat or something.
It was really interesting because Bowman came right out and said, I thought this was great. I mean, he came right out and said, this was a Cheney operation, 9/11. I mean, he just came right out and said, I couldn't believe he said that. You know?
Well, you look at their document, full spectrum dominance. They don't hide it. They want to dominate air, sea, land. You know, they don't want any nation that's attempting to build up a military to have any chance of competing with them.
Boy, I mean, there must be a lot of men and women in the services at higher levels who see all this unfolding. I guess they're fairly helpless, are they?
Well, this former lieutenant, Don Grand Dupree, I think his name is, he's written several books. He was a big Pentagon official years ago. According to his sources who still work in the Pentagon, there's a major dissenting faction.
Yeah, yeah.
That is kind of just waiting, you know, for the right moment, and as though they're planning a military coup.
Well, wouldn't that be good?
I tell you, I think it's the only chance we really have of I mean, I think we can do it peacefully as well, but you got to wake people out of their coma. I hope it's not too little too late what's happening now, people waking up, you know.
Yeah, we seem in a very dangerous situation in terms of their staging another state-sponsored terrorist act to enable them to impose martial law. And
unfortunately, all the indications are pointing in that direction right now, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the laws they've been passing, but just the end of last year, Bush passed the John Warner Military Reform Act, which enables him to override posse comitatus and declare martial law in case of an emergency. Then he just set up this past week this shadow government law, which is, you know, they already had that in place, but now he can officially do it. He can implement the shadow government in case of a crisis. I mean, you don't do stuff like this unless you're planning on implementing it.
No.
And then, of course, we got people like Tommy Franks. This was scary. This is the guy that headed up the Iraq War. He said that in the case of the next terrorist attack, and he said it's not a question of if, but when. Oh, they're so confident we're going to get another major one.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said it's, you can just picture him rubbing his hands together as he said this. It's going to mean the end of our 200-plus-year experiment with democracy. It's going to mean the end of the Constitution. Clearly, there will be many Americans who won't like this, but it's going to have to be something that we're going to have to resort to in wake of the next attack of this nature. And, you know, he said it'll mean setting up some form of military government. That's martial law.
Yeah. That was interesting on The View. Rosie O'Donnell said she thought it was state-sponsored terrorism. That word now, that I guess that comes from Alex Jones, I think, coined that term, state-sponsored terrorism. And now that's in people's consciousness. Like, people are aware of that.
She's got 30 million people that watch her. That's one-tenth of the country's population. So that's a deadly blow. This Thursday show, providing her plane doesn't crash or she shoots herself twice in the head, is going to be a major, major event.
Yeah, another tragic suicide, 63 bullets in her head.
Yeah, right.
There's a great quote from Benjamin Franklin that I wish Americans would think about when they're considering these criminals. He said, "Those who would sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither."
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's the whole premise, is that you have to sacrifice your liberty to ensure your security, but it's, you know...
Well, you know, Eisenhower, in his farewell address, made the point that there's no liberty, no reason why liberty and freedom cannot prosper together.
Yeah.
I mean, liberty and security.
Security.
But here they are telling you, you've got to trade off one for the other. No, you don't.
And, I mean, Eisenhower, of all people, warning about the military-industrial complex. I mean...
Right.
You know,
he coined that term.
Yeah, a general who is a president... warning about the military and the industry. I mean, that's, you know, pretty incredible. But it's like, Gore Vidal says that when Harry Truman passed the National Security Act, the United States became the national security state. And everything that's happened in the last 60 years is essentially, has come from that, you know. And you know, you had a phony Cold War, and then you had a hot war in Vietnam, and there's always got to be a crisis. And then... when the Soviet Union disappeared, all of a sudden, along came the first Gulf War, you know, which even at the time, like, I mean, my own reaction to that was just listening to all the rhetoric about it, I thought exactly, my initial reaction to it, and I still think it's valid, was this is like the Sudetenland for the Germans, you know. You create this phony crisis, and, you know, you puff up your chest and you beat it, and then you go over and you kick the crap out of somebody else and, you know, and sort of vindicate yourself and say, oh, we had to do this. And, I mean, I don't think the first Gulf War, I mean, if you really look at it objectively, I don't think it was, I think Saddam Hussein was encouraged, as some people have said, by the American government to invade Kuwait.
Oh, yeah, they set that up. In fact, April Glaspie...
Exactly.
Yeah, they told her basically to give him the green light.
Go ahead. We don't have any problem.
And then later they blasted her when she was just following orders from Daddy Bush and James Baker, you know.
Yeah.
That was a setup. And even Saddam said how amazed he was. He says, I can't believe it. They told me they had no interest in the Iraq-Kuwait border dispute, and now they want to come and bomb me. He says, what's going on here, you know?
Yeah, and of course, you know, the response from the West was, well, we have to respect the sanctity of borders. But where was that concern when Saddam started the war with Iran, which lasted 8 years in 1979?
And they supported both sides, too. But people need to realize the game that goes on here. It's like in Nicaragua, you know, they supported the Contras and the Sandinistas.
Yeah.
Because if they didn't, the war couldn't drag on, and they couldn't maximize their profits. And it was the same with Iraq and Iran. They were supporting both sides.
Yeah, it's just, it destabilized them both. They keep them both weak by keeping them tied up in a war that neither one could win. But, I mean, that was, you know, when people kept in the media, too, you know, all of a sudden Saddam Hussein, who had been United States ally through this whole war with Iran, all of a sudden he became the Mideast madman, and you heard that over and over again. I'm thinking, like, compared to who?
Yeah, right.
Like, I mean, there's a whole slew of Mideast madmen as far as I can see. There's a couple of Western ones, you know, sitting in Washington and London, too. I mean, you know, it's just so bizarre how people don't have any, like, again, Gore Vidal refers to the United States of amnesia. There's no historical perspective on any of this, you know. It's like every 15 seconds, you know, some new thing comes up and everybody gets all excited and runs off. It's like, you know, on The Simpsons, there was this great scene on The Simpsons once when Homer was going into Moe's Bar and a guy came out, he was his exact double, and all these passerbys stopped, and Homer stopped, and he looked at his double, and his double looked at him, and the crowd looked at it, and everybody was stunned for a moment, and there was this moment of awakening, like, wow, this is incredible. And then a dog with a fluffy tail ran by, and Homer said, look, everybody, a dog with a fluffy tail, and they all chased after the dog with a fluffy tail. That's the news.
I mean, yeah, that's what the media does.
Every night, there's a new dog with a fluffy tail,
exactly.
And we're all supposed to chase after it, you know, like, what a, you know, and forget what happened the day before or 5 minutes before, you know. Like,
but Wag the Dog was a good movie for that, too, if you ever saw that.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was first watching Wag the Dog, you know, they have to create this phony crisis to divert attention, and they say, well, we got to have a war somewhere. Where should we have it? And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, Albania. And they say, Albania. And I think, yeah, perfect, because nobody knows anything about Albania. Nobody gives a shit about it, basically, you know. Like,
exactly. And there we were in Kosovo, you know.
Yeah.
And it turns out Milosevic, they never found evidence of mass graves. They lied about that. They completely concocted that whole thing. There were no mass graves. They found some graves, but they were people that died from the fighting. It wasn't from any ethnic cleansing.
Wow. So, Charles, maybe can you say something about your other book on the New American Disorder? I guess it's...
the New World Disorder, yeah.
New World Disorder, sorry.
Yeah, it's basically, it covers the... 9/11 is kind of like the introduction to government corruption, but then the New World Disorder shows how we got in this mess. You know, this corruption didn't just rise up under Bush.
No.
It whipped into high gear under Bush.
Yeah.
But it goes back a long ways. And so I give kind of like a history, but also I talk about what's going on now and what they're proposing for the future. But, you know, the whole premise of the book is that this is all leading to world government. That's what they want. The elites want to control the world under one system of laws. They call the shots, and everybody must bow, and if you don't, you get shot or whatever. Tortured first, because that's fun, and then get shot.
The aim seems to be, like, culling the human race, like genocide, actually. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the main objectives is to reduce the population by at least one-tenth of what it is now. In fact, the official figure is even worse than that. They want to reduce it down to 500 million.
Oh, yeah, I'd heard 400 million. Yeah, I'd heard that. And there's 6 billion in the planet. So, oof.
That's scary, you know.
Yeah.
And it's easier to manage that size population. And they figure that there's probably that many who would kiss their behinds anyway. So we'll get rid of the... And that's one of the reasons why they're spying on us the way they want to know who the dissenters are. They're going to go after them first.
Yeah.
Get rid of them.
Yeah.
I mean, these people are just absolute psychos. They really are. The world is run
by
psychopaths.
Yeah, they really are. It's so disturbed that it's beyond the comprehension of most people. That's why it's like people live in denial. Like they have, people are so, like, as a psychologist, like they have this splitting in their psyche.
Yeah.
Of knowing the truth, but just it's so beyond them that they just have to deny it and live in denial and deflect their attention into other things.
Well, you know, part of the reason that is probably the fact that when you start looking into these family names, you know, they're all intermarrying, and that literally it's like the kings of medieval Europe. There's all this incest stuff going on. The Bushes are actually third cousins to the Kerrys, who are third cousins to the Al Gore family. You know, they actually are all related.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
So, in fact, George Bush Sr. is a third cousin to Barbara.
Really?
So there's probably that element involved here. You know, they're probably mentally defected.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the drugs that Bush is on. That helps it, too.
Well, the other side of it, too, is that if you do challenge the official version of anything and you start asking questions and you point out all the inconsistencies and in the cover stories, then there's something wrong with you. You're a quote-unquote conspiracy theorist, and you're something pathologically, you know,
right.
Awry about you.
Well, you know, I love that you brought that up, because there was an article just about a week and a half ago citing about maybe a dozen and a half major psychologists and psychiatrists from around the country who said that the official 9/11 story is crazy, and those who believe it are themselves crazy. One of them is a professor from Oxford, for crying out loud.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I meant to look that fellow up, and I had heard about that.
It'd be good to get him on as a guest, huh?
Wow.
But, so their attempt to try to make you look crazy for questioning it isn't working out so well. And the truth is, you are crazy to believe this. I mean, how can you possibly fathom 19 radical Muslims who couldn't even fly well. They couldn't even fly a Cessna, let alone a commercial airliner. Their own instructors said they wouldn't fly with them anymore. They were so bad. And yet there they were pulling off difficult maneuvers like Flight 77, supposedly this downward spiral turn of 270 degrees. I don't believe it was Flight 77 that hit the Pentagon, but
no.
If you accept the official story, how could you have flown that plane like that when you didn't have skills enough to fly a Cessna?
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing in their story there's no evidence for anything they've ever maintained. Everything
right.
Over time has been disproven.
I love this one. Master planners, they called them. Yet they hijacked planes up in Boston when their targets were the towers in New York, over a half-hour flight away, when it only takes 5 minutes for an intercept or a shoot down anywhere over North American airspace, especially the Northeast where we have a lot of air bases. So how could you call that master planning?
Yeah,
why didn't they hijack planes in New York?
Yeah.
And then Otto, we're told, had all these papers in his check-in bag. Now, why do you have a check-in bag anyway when you're going to commit suicide? But in any case, you're going to slam the planes into buildings. It's going to destroy you. Why have a check-in bag? Conveniently, that's the only bag that didn't make its flight that morning of all the planes that left from Logan on 9/11. Anyway, but in the bag, he has all the plans the FBI told us. Oh, how do you think we found all this out, all this information? We have all their names, their histories, the detail of the plans, what they were, their objectives were. Why would, if they were master planners, why would they do that when they must have known that check-in bags are also randomly selected for searches? These documents could have been uncovered and the whole plan would have been thwarted. Master planners, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't involved anyway. I mean,
right, oh, yeah, but I'm just saying, if you go by their official story.
No, it doesn't make sense. No, nothing in their story, official version, makes sense.
But, yeah, I mean, there's no evidence there were any hijackers on any of those planes.
No.
You know, 8 of them are still alive. There's no pictures of them from Logan.
Yeah.
No pictures of them from Newark.
I mean, evidence is like, you know, the way they found that passport, which was supposed to have been in the plane that hit the tower, which is incinerated, and the tower comes down, they find the passport on the street.
Well, you know, what's really laughable about that was supposedly from Flight 11. Flight 11 was completely absorbed when it struck the North Tower. It hit it square on in the center. No part of that plane exited the other side of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're supposed to believe a piece of paper flew several blocks.
Yeah.
I can't believe the stuff people buy. Oh, it's just unbelievable. But there's the South Tower. That was hit on the corner. It didn't hit any of the central columns, and yet that building came down first. It shouldn't have come down at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so obvious they were controlled demolitions. I mean, it's so obvious. I mean, it's undeniable.
Did you know, by the way, that the NIST report, that's the National Institute of Standards and Technology, supposedly they produced the definitive report, 10,000-page document explaining why the towers came down. And yet, listen to the statements they make in there. They said, we found no evidence of explosives being used to take the towers down. Yet they admit later that they never tested any of the steel to see if explosive residues could be found. Then they state
that we found no evidence of molten steel. Well, of course not, because by the time they launched their investigation, all the steel, everything was removed from ground zero. But anyway, they said, but even if there was molten steel, and there certainly was, even if there was, they said, it's possible that that could have happened by the flammable materials buried under the pile, which would have caused the heat, the temperature to rise. Can you believe that? Any fool who's ever burned leaves in his backyard knows that insulating ash, all of that can do is maintain heat underneath, but it can't. You can't have the heat temperature rise.
No.
There's no oxygen getting under there.
Well, the more basic point about that, too, again, that going back to your question earlier, Chris, is that that was another thing that really struck me, was when you started cleaning up at Ground Zero, that's a crime scene.
Yeah, right.
And they carted away all the steel.
Yeah.
They removed it from a crime scene. And, I mean, in a way, like, I mean, we think of it, it's the scene of a terrorist attack, like a war zone. But it wasn't a war zone. It was a crime scene. It was the scene of the greatest mass murder in the history of the United States. And yet they removed evidence.
And who was doing that? It's a felony to do that. It was FEMA doing it.
Exactly. I mean, it's a crime to do that. You're not
FEMA, the same people who wouldn't let food get in. 50 countries, they turned them away after Katrina. They wouldn't allow hundreds of trucks from around the country in. They wouldn't let people leave the city to get their own help. They cut communications cables so that people outside wouldn't know the sufferings that were going on. They did everything they could to maximize the death toll down there. FEMA is a criminal organization, folks.
Wow. So, Charles, how about what do you see on the positive side here? It seems like, I mean, I think we have an information war going on. I like that term from Alex Jones, the info wars.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Like, the truth has to get out there. There has to just be more and more widely spread. That the truth is in people's face that they can no longer deny it.
Yeah, they've really blown it, and this is what is encouraging. 9/11 was a major mistake for them. They got too impatient. They pushed it too far, too quick. Previously, they were able, for the most part, to get away with their fiascos because they moved slowly, cautiously.
Yeah.
But the neocons were like, no, let's get this thing, underway. We want it tomorrow,
Yeah, well, they have Bush in the White House, so it's an ideal time to be moving ahead.
Yeah. Bunch of sellouts. The Bush family single-handedly has caused more havoc in this country than anybody else in the history of the entire nation.
Yeah.
Under Daddy Bush, he was the real president during the Reagan years, more debt was accrued in this country than what was created by all previous presidents combined, and now Junior has beaten that record. So the bulk of our national debt comes single-handedly from father and son Bush.
Wow.
But again, because they've moved so rapidly, so obnoxiously forward and made so many mistakes, people are finally getting out of their coma. In spite of all the Prozac and the Ritalin they're popping and the dumbed-down Fox News they're watching, people are finally catching on and they're realizing. So they have lost the most powerful weapon they had in their arsenal, which is propaganda. There's still people out there falling for it, but not anywhere near the amount that was before.
I mean, in the States, some of the polls, like I've heard of polls in New York City, something like 70 to 80%. Of people don't believe the government account.
Oh, yeah. When I was at Ground Zero, I yelled out Bush did 9/11, and everybody was clapping. So, yeah, New Yorkers can't stand them. And they know that Giuliani is a phony exploiting the terror fear so he can get elected. They can't stand him down there. He doesn't dare set foot. In fact, the fire department is disgusted because they know that he played a part in the cover-up, too, of the 9/11 attacks in general, but also the condition of the air at Ground Zero for the cleanup crew workers.
Yeah.
But did you know he passed an ordinance right after 9/11 that forbade people from taking pictures of the debris at Ground Zero as it was being removed?
Really?
For obvious reasons.
Giuliani did that?
Yeah.
Wow. Well.
And in fact, just in case people weren't complying, he had that huge 60-foot fortress fence installed surrounding the perimeter of the thing, and it was lined inside with this white screen mesh, which gave you a blurry view so that any pictures you took, you couldn't see any detail. There was no reason for that except so you couldn't take the pictures, clear pictures, because, a lot of damning evidence was there at their crime scene,
Yeah, wow. I heard on Alex Jones last evening, he said that loose change has now been downloaded off the internet 100 million times. I'd heard 10.5 million last fall, I heard on CBC in Canada. But apparently now he was saying the number is 100 million downloads.
Yeah, it's really shot up there, yeah.
Yeah, and they're coming out with a new version of it.
Right,
to be released
right.
within the next month. I mean,
the Night on Truth movement is growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, it's they can't contain it, and they know it, and they're afraid.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question I have then about that, you know, and this is my own skepticism about, you know, the positive side of things, but this is something that I you know, other people have proposed. Why don't critics of 9/11 from around the world, why don't they convene an international symposium on 9/11 and do their own investigation? And
well, actually, that's been launched. I don't know if you know this, but Chavez.
Oh.
Down in Venezuela, actually, has commissioned a panel. Several big names. Willie Rodriguez, as a matter of fact, the last
oh, yeah.
one was. Yeah, he's a consultant assisting in this. As you might guess, they've had a lot of barriers put in their way, but the last I heard, that's still. In fact, I'm going to be having Willie Rodriguez on my show here pretty soon.
Wow.
And I want to ask him.
Where's that? Would you? Well, before we forget, can you promote your own sites there, Charles, and where people can listen to you further? And
yeah, the main website for my show is truthhertz.com, and it's spelled H-E-R-T-Z. And if you go there, it has the list of networks I'm on. I'm on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm on the Revere Network. Tomorrow we have a show on there. We also simulcast on paltalk.com. And then I'm also on the Paranormal Radio Network.
And then you're in Paltalk rooms.
Right. I'm also featured on the John Coolis show, too, every Sunday, untoldmysteries.com. He's had me on now ever since this summer, every week as a commentator for, you know, giving updates on the latest political happenings.
Well, way to go, Charles. We just need people out there like you that keep pushing this and to helping to enlighten people, you know, get this information out there is just so critical. You're doing over a dozen hours a week of shows, aren't you?
Yeah, 15 hours on average.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. Sometimes it must wear on you.
I was just going to say,
you think it's into the paranoia much?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, I'm ahead of the game right now. You know, I've got a lot of guests booked for weeks to come, and I've got a lot of material to work with, you know. But, yeah, on average, it's a good 10 hours for a two-hour show of work, you know.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. But I love it. You know, I seem to work better under pressure for some reason.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Okay. So can you do anything more? Oh, I was going to ask you about your other book. Do you want to say a little bit more about your other book there?
Oh, yeah, The New World Disorder. So basically it's a background. It's a history of, you know, how this whole thing started, who's been behind it, the elites, of course, and how they hijacked our whole system. They began with setting up central banks. To control a country, you don't need a tank or a bomb or a missile or a sword even. All you need is to control its economy. If you control its economy, you control everything else. Money runs everything. And so that's what they began doing during the 19th century all across Europe. It's interesting, you know, if you look at the history of central banks in Europe, one after another, bang, 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 they were popping up all over the place. And it was the same interests that were behind the scenes setting these up. It was the Rothschilds.
I was going to say the Rothschilds, right?
Sure, yeah. And all during that time, they were also trying to establish one here. They made some progress here and there during the 19th century. You know, they had in fact, in the late 18th century, they set up the first bank of the United States. It wasn't a full-fledged central bank. It wasn't totally controlled by the Rothschilds, but it was the first step in that direction. Of course, it didn't work. That bank got shut down. They reopened it 4 years later. It was called the Second Bank of the United States, but that got shot down by Andrew Jackson. They also tried to shoot him down. He caught a bullet in the head, but he did survive. He recognized, though, that it was the banking powers, Biddle and his associates, that were behind it. He knew it. It was them. He was speaking out very heavily against this system. He knew what they were trying to do, to hijack our economy. And by the way, it's interesting if you, and I point this out in the book, you know, of all the presidents who have been assassinated, coincidentally, they've also stood up against central banking. 20 years later, they were trying to push a central bank under Lincoln. He refused. He wouldn't take loans from them to fund the Civil War. Popped him off. 20 years later, they're trying to get a central bank again under Garfield. He refused, popped him off. 20 years later, it's every 20 years. 20 years later, they're doing it again under McKinley. McKinley resists them. They popped him off. Finally, under Woodrow Wilson, they realized, okay, if we're going to get this to work, we have to get our hand-picked puppet in office, and that's what Wilson was. They groomed him very early on. When he was elected, his chief advisor was a man named Colonel Edward Mandel House. He was the goer between from the White House to Wall Street. And he wrote a book 2 years before Wilson was in office called Philip Drew Administrator. It was a fictitious novel, but it was based on what he knew was coming. He talked about, with fictitious names, but it was himself he was referring to, how he was going back and forth between Wall Street and Washington and dictating policies to create a central bank and a graduating income tax, two of the main planks of the Communist Manifesto. His dream was to set up socialism here dreamed of by Karl Marx. And that's exactly what happened under Woodrow Wilson in 1913, the graduating income tax through the fraudulent 16th Amendment and the central bank through the Federal Reserve Act was created.
Yeah.
On his deathbed, by the way, Wilson said, "I unwittingly sold out my country." But it's interesting because I provide this fascinating historical perspective that now makes events that look haphazard and nonsensical and, difficult to tie in together and make any sense of it. I put it all together and show how it all fits like a hand in a glove. The elitists set up World War I to bring the nations to desperation so that afterwards when they introduced the League of Nations, they would see it, hopefully, according, this is what was their desire, they would see it as a means to set up a system of world government that would prevent another world war from happening. But the League of Nations failed, of course. The United States wouldn't join. They had anticipated this happening, so they had plans to set up another world war, and that's what they did. After World War II, they established the United Nations. This time they put it on the American people's front doorstep, figuring they won't be suspicious now. It's right on their soil. They bought it, and that's been the means through which they've tried to create world government. Of course, they also anticipated that might not work, in which case that they would launch a third world war involving the Middle East. Well, here we are now.
Wow.
This was all laid out, over 100 years ago. The documents attest to this. In fact, the Rees Committee, established in 1953, looked at the meeting minute notes from the Carnegie Institute for International Peace. What a misnomer that is. But in their documents, they found that the Carnegie Institute in 1910 was planning this global war, World War I. And they said their biggest problem was how to involve the United States, because at that time the U.S. was very anti-interventionist.
Yeah.
We were isolationist.
Yeah.
How to involve the U.S. And, you look at how we were involved, and you can see how that whole thing played out. Woodrow Wilson, who was a puppet of Wall Street, was told what to do. He was sending weapons over to England and France while we were claiming to be neutral. He won re-election by promising falsely that he was going to keep us out of the war, when all the while he was sending these weapons, and the Germans knew this.
Wow.
And they sent mercenaries over to the dock to warn passengers, don't board these ships. They've got them stocked with weapons. They're going to be shot, they're going to be sunk. And, of course, the U.S. had their own propaganda minions there saying, oh, don't listen to them, it's just war propaganda. So when the Lusitania was sunk, they capitalized on that, demonized the German people. There was the U.S. government that was the perpetrator here. You know what I'm saying? They set those people up. They wanted the maximum amount of people dead so that they could beef up the propaganda and demonize the German people. Well, they did this with the Spanish-American War, too. They set the bomb off on the Maine. They blamed the Spaniards. That was an inside job as well.
Untold history we have.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny how much they've dummied down the educational system at all levels.
Oh, yeah. You don't read about this in the history books. It's all covered. You've got to dig. I mean, the information is there. It's out there. You can find it, but you won't find it in the history books.
Yeah.
I mean, the same corporations, the same financial interests that are rigging all of these things own the printing presses. They own the media. They own the educational establishment. Washington sends out millions of dollars every year to major colleges and universities around the country, and that's how they keep them compliant.
Yeah.
You don't shut your professors up, and we're going to cut off funding. I mean, that's what happened with Stephen Jones. He discovered thermite residue on the pieces of steel he examined from the WTC.
Yeah.
And there was no problem for the longest time. All of a sudden in September, out of nowhere, BYU tells him, shut up or ship out. So he took an early retirement.
We have a case going on like that in Ottawa at the moment. A tenured professor in the physics department, Denis Rancourt in Ottawa,
has had an activism course, which is highly popular among the students, and he's shown loose change in it, and he goes into the banking system, and they've shut his courses down at the University of Ottawa.
Sure.
Which is an ongoing. It's just the tip of the iceberg. It brings into focus what's the control that's been there for many years, but we just didn't suspect.
Right. Now, all the nations are in on the bandwagon because they're you know, the leaders are locked into this system, and they're exploiting 9/11 every bit as much as Bush is. You know, you see Howard over there in Australia back in late 2005, I remember saying they announced that a piece of legislation he was trying to pass, you know, rights trampling anti-terror legislation, didn't go through. So that night I was on Pal Talk and I'm telling people, you watch, there's going to be some fiasco in the next few days. Sure enough, the very next day, he issued a terror alert. And when asked, what is this based on? It's national security. I can't divulge that information, but it's a credible source. And then the very next day, Parliament reconvenes and votes in the controversial law because of the previous day's alert.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's so obvious.
We had the same thing in Canada, too, where we had a terrorist ring was broken up. And, I mean, allegedly,
the
terrorist ring. And what really struck me about this is that these guys are supposed to be plotting nefarious things, and everybody fell all over themselves, congratulating themselves. And really what it was to promote the need for further and more intrusive surveillance and bigger budgets and everything.
Yeah.
But what really struck me was these are young guys, you know, who may or may not have been guilty of something that we don't know. We haven't seen any evidence yet. But not only I was listening to a couple of defense lawyers. They said, you know, the procedures by which they were processed were, you know, unlike anything they'd ever seen before in terms of trying to get any information as to what these guys were actually supposed to have done. But the Toronto Star newspaper plasters their pictures all over the front pages of the paper, but gives their addresses where they live, shows their houses and everything. I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. We got major criminals running around here left, right, and center, and you'll never see anybody's address. You know, like, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, geez, why don't we just get some rope and go and hang them now and save ourselves the expense of trying them?
And then their trials are all secret anyway.
Yeah,
national security, because if we knew what was happening, we'd be arresting the RCMP and CSIS and Canadian intelligence, Canadian intelligence people.
Yeah, there's an elite core of geniuses. I mean, these guys. We have a scandal here with the bombing of Air India, which happened 22 years ago, which is of untold proportions in terms of our intelligence service. It's just like, it's unbelievable the incompetence and the stupidity of these people and the criminal negligence. And you know, 20-some years later, we still can't get to the bottom of what actually happened, you know. And every time anybody wants to see the information, national security.
National security, the little Trump card.
Oh, God, it's just disgusting. You know?
Just after 9/11, Ashcroft came out and said that he threatened Congress. You better pass the Patriot Act. By the way,
was already prepared.
Right. Ron Paul had brought that out. He said, this is not new. This legislation was drafted up a long time ago. They were trying to get this long before 9/11 to pass. Anyway, he was threatening Congress, if you don't pass this, there's going to be another attack because you're not giving us the necessary tools we need. And so he you know, intimidated him. And he said, there's sleeper cells all over the United States, and we can't hunt them down without this legislation. It came out less than a year later. The FBI actually stated that they found no evidence of any sleeper cells of Al-Qaeda anywhere in the United States. Well, of course not, because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, it's such a boogeyman.
And there's never been one conviction under the legislation.
Oh, it's laughable. Yeah. You watch these stories of these arrests, and every single one of them turned out to be a scam. The Orange Alerts themselves were scams, every single one of them. Even Tom Ridge admitted, after stepping down as Homeland Security Director, that he never wanted to issue any of the Orange Alerts under his watch, but he was pressured by the White House to do so. They always appear at key political moments to take attention off some scam.
The timing of them. It's always in the timing. Well, you know, on the same topic, you know, like, I mean, talk about hidden history. There's a great book, and I'm sure it's out of print. It's by a guy named James Aronson, who was a left-wing journalist in the United States, and it's called The Press and the Cold War. But really what it is, it's the history of the press's coverage of a variety of events through the whole 20th century in the United States. A brilliant book, and it just shows how the press has always colluded with the official version of things, going right back to the First World War and the representation of what was going on in the Soviet Union, you know, the newly created Soviet Union. And it's incredible. Like, I mean, I'd always thought from my reading of history that Korea was started because of communist aggression, and that was the story that was always put out. But in this book, he tells the story. What happened was that the United States, that was the official story, and it was in all the major newspapers and everything, and on radio. Of course, television was just in its infancy. But I.F. Stone went over to the journalist, Muckraker, went to England, and over in England, at the same time, it had come out that really that this is all phony, that what had prompted the Korean War wasn't at all communist aggression. And there were all sorts of people from Europe, reporters who had been there, who had witnessed what had happened, who were filing completely different stories about what happened. So Stone was kind of skeptical at first, but they end up writing a whole book about this, which never got published or released.
Well, Douglas MacArthur, his book did come out. Of course, they demonized him so bad that at the time nobody listened, but now with hindsight people are listening, you know, to what he said. He could have ended the Korean War in 2 weeks.
Well,
but he was getting instructions from Washington, which he said were deliberately designed to prolong the war and cost more American lives. He said, I refuse to follow it. Because I didn't, you know, as commander of my troops, it was my responsibility to protect their lives, not put them in danger. And it's because he didn't comply that they fired him and demonized him. But he was right. He could have ended it. They didn't want it ended.
No.
There's no money in that.
No.
The money is dragging it on. And, you know, the big corporations that fatten our politicians' pockets with generous contributions want these wars to drag on because they get the contracts. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. I know we've just got about 10 minutes here, and we can keep you on to the end, Charles. But let's what would you urge people out there listening today? What should we be doing? I mean, we all need to get more informed, and we need all to be talking to people. We could be making phone calls. What do you think?
Well, right now, I see the potential for some great change, and so do the neocons. That's why they fear him so much, is to rally behind Ron Paul.
Yeah.
And in your local communities, if you see him being banned from debates or from being televised, you call them and let them know. If they get enough people voicing the opinion out of fear, you know, they don't want people uprising and demonstrating and, you know, withdrawing support. You know, call your politicians, call your local news stations, and, you know, make sure he's getting coverage. Let them know that he is getting support.
Yeah.
Because this man can bring real change. What he's proposing is, you know, this is the first time that I've seen this, someone like this to come down the pike that well, there's been other people, but not on this scale. I mean, he wants to make real change. What candidate have you ever heard address the Federal Reserve at all, let alone, you know, pointing out the real problems with it, that it is, in fact, a private-run, for-profit entity that runs our economy and has never been audited.
Yeah, and yeah, won't answer to Congress.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And I've heard him say he would have disbanded the CIA, I think I heard him say at one point.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is someone that, you know, he's going to bring change, rally behind this guy, support him, get in touch with him, find out what you can do, you maybe give some contributions to him, and share this information that we're talking about today with others. You know, again, you can go to lulu.com and get my Piercing the Fog at 9/11. All the documentation is there that you need. You can actually get the book pretty cheap now. It's for like a little over $6 for the downloadable version. For the printed version, it's about 14. Lulu enabled me to bring the price down significantly. So
Ron Paul, I'm totally floored by him. I mean, to hear someone, he's so eloquent. Like, here's a statesman in a whole class beyond anyone I've seen for 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I think the people of the world love Kennedy. I think there's always been that, you know, and not only did Americans lose a great president, but the people around the world. I mean, I felt that as a child. I remember the day Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
You know, and here's another person of that stature, and yeah, Jim, you got to get on YouTube. Watch him in some of these. See, he was on CNN. Wolf Blitzer did an excellent interview. You can see the interviewers how much they're really taken by him.
Yeah,
like he has such intelligence. He's so sensible.
Right.
Where's he from?
Well, he's a genius. I mean, the guy. He's a doctor as well as a
doctor.
Yeah. I mean, he knows his stuff.
He's a statesman. Unbelievable. It's a bright star. And in Canada, I'd urge people, look into the Canadian Action Party. Look at their website. We in Canada, we need to be organizing too. Next time we have a Canadian election, these issues need to come out to the fore. So people realize that the conservative and liberals have both sold us out to the corporate elites.
They really have.
Can I ask one quick question of Charles Krista? This is something that I really don't know about, and I'd really like to hear just what his take is on it. But you know, when Cheney formed the group that formulated the national energy policy, and it was kept secret, and it's never been disclosed. Do you talk about that in your book?
That specifically I don't, but I mean, there's just so many issues. Like, I don't even mention Katrina, although I'm considering if I should add that.
Here's what I'm kind of wondering. What do you think, after reading all these other things about how it would fit, it seems to me that there must be something in the, first of all, I don't understand why national energy policy is classified and can't be released to the public.
It's all his cronies that he's going to be contracting over to, like Halliburton.
But do you think maybe that they just set out the whole scenario is that we're going to control the Caspian Sea natural gas and oil, and that's everything was based around that. Do you think?
Yeah, I don't think they were bargaining on so much attention being given to the PNAC document, which laid that same agenda out. And I think this echoed the same thing, and it just would have proven further what their real agenda is. I had Greg Palast on yesterday. And he brought out an interesting perspective. My take on the Iraq War is that the main reason. Well, I mean, there's other reasons. It's Israel's security, of course, but. As far as the oil goes, the reason I argued there was they wanted to take Saddam out because he was a competitor in the price-setting market,
right.
And now they can charge whatever they want.
Right.
He comes at it from a different angle. I found it very interesting. I mean, it comes out the same. It's all about protecting their profits in oil. But his argument was that they are deliberately inciting our troops dying over there and keeping the fighting going. They're prolonging it. They want this crisis to continue. They could seal the border and stop Iran from sending supplies over there. They don't want to do that. They want the fighting to escalate and continue so they can use this to justify the high prices that they're charging for oil.
Right. Yeah. There's another guy, Chris, that I don't know if you know his work. Greg Palast is an American journalist who works out of England. Really, really interesting guy who really is a voice that should be heard and is
depressed
in the United States. Very, very bright guy. A really, really interesting guy.
He works for the Guardian, the BBC.
Yeah.
And, he's. I want to have him on again. I mean,
his analysis of what happened in the first election in Florida is, I think, the best explanation I've read of how Bush stole the election.
He caught Jeb stuffing, a crew working for Jeb, stuffing ballot boxes with names out of obituaries and out-of-state phone books.
And how they systematically and illegally disenfranchised black people. It's just amazing. I mean,
90,000 were purged illegally.
The numbers that would have delivered Florida to Gore by such a huge margin.
But, of course, it didn't matter because they did. That was a backup in case the other plan didn't work, which is the one they went with, the Supreme Court that was rigged, stacked by daddy.
Okay, well, we need to be winding down here.
Yep.
Thanks, Charles. Thanks a lot for coming on. I hope I can get you back maybe in a couple months again.
Oh, sure, you bet. Anytime.
And I'll be in your room. 9/11, it was an inside job on Pal Talk.
Definitely.
It's so nice. It's so valuable for people into this truth movement to have some kind of contact like that so you don't feel so isolated and alone in dealing with it. That's what I found.
Oh, we're in the majority now.
Yeah.
The ones who doubt 9/11 are in a majority. Whether they believe that the government did it or just let it happen, we're in the majority. Most people don't believe it anymore.
Yeah. Wow. So we may be, some huge changes, some huge things coming up. Everything's coming to a head in a way. I can really sense the concern of the New World Disorder, like these groups, that they, in a way, they went too far with 9/11. They put before the world the evidences of their conspiracies.
Yeah, the emperor has no clothes, and what a hideous sight it is.
Yeah, it strikes me, we all have, all countries have laws that forbid the financing and carrying out of international terrorism. So if we can apply our own laws within our own countries and seize all the assets of these people complicit in these crimes and restore all that wealth to the countries.
Selective law enforcement is what it's called.
Yeah.
You know, if I could just throw this in real quick, this is fascinating.
Yep.
We have a law here called the Trading with the Enemy Act. It's supposedly designed to prevent companies from trading with nations that we're at war with, right?
Oh, yeah.
But if I actually read the legislation, it states this law prohibits corporations from trading with belligerent nations toward the United States, except those that have special concessions from the president.
Wow.
So it's a law to protect the monopolies of the big corporations. They don't want any competition.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, huge. It's unbelievable. It strikes me at times, like, the world situation puts any Hollywood story or any Hollywood tale to shame. Like, what's really happened in real life.
Truth is stranger than fiction, yeah.
It's beyond anything any author's ever imagined.
Right.
Maybe the Lord of the Rings is the closest thing.
Yeah, right.
The fall of the two towers and maybe the return of the king, return of righteousness in the world.
Complete with the evil dark forces working behind the scenes, you know. We got the whole thing. It's like
Star Wars
or something.
It's like there's forces of light and love around the world gathering and learning the truth of these things, and enough is enough.
The good news is the dark side loses in the end.
Yeah.
I think the forces of BBS are signaling us that we're supposed to come to an end. But
it was really nice to
hear Charles. It was very informative. Thanks very much. It was great listening to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Charles. And I'll talk to you again. We'll get you back.
You bet.
Okay.
Yeah,
goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Jim. So, it was very interesting, Jim.
Yeah, very well-informed guy.
Yeah, I've heard him, like I was saying, on the Pal Talk room, and, you know, I listened for hours. He's been a major source of information and education for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people should pay attention to these people, and don't believe it just because he says it, but look into what he's saying, because there's a lot to what he's saying, I think. And the more you look around, the more you'll find that there's just so much information out there that's, there's a gross conspiracy going on here that needs to be exposed, and don't believe everything you hear, and don't react like a machine, like a human being. Anyway,
and just to come back, you know, this zero point where, but the aim here is to explore spiritual teachings.
Yeah.
You know, to be spiritual, it's not just enough. We need to deal with this problems in the world. No man is an island. We all need to take responsibility here and stand up to the plate, take a part in bringing about a new world of justice and truth. Okay, thank you. Thank you, BBS. Thank you, James. Thank you, Charles.
Thanks.
Back in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Chris. Bye.
Goodbye.